Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This is Free Range with Von Miller, the podcast where I step outside the lines and I take you with me. Each week, we're talking everything from the biggest stories around the league to the biggest stories off the field. This isn't your average sports podcast. This is game meets culture, locker room meets living room, and no topic is off limits. So if you're into good conversations that ruffle a few feathers, join me every Wednesday and follow Free Range with Von Miller everywhere you get your podcast.
Welcome to Radio Rental. The scariest stories you've ever heard in your life. All told by real people. And off we go.
This wasn't a human being that I saw. There's something here in this house, something not of this world.
There was a woman moving through the hall. I stepped back and I was completely alone.
Radio Rental is available now. Listen for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Alrighty, hour number three of our radio program. It is the Zach Gelb Show, coast to coast on the Infinity Sports Network. John Sumrall is the new head football coach at Florida. Lane Kiffin is going to LSU. Ryan Silverfield to Arkansas. Alex Golish to Auburn. And Kentucky has said goodbye to Mark Stoops. Let's talk some SEC ball now with the Florida legend, Chris Doran, kind enough to join us right now on the Zach Gelb Show. Chris, appreciate the time. How are you?
Hey, good to be with you, Zach. Thanks for having me.
So what's the immediate reaction, right? The news comes out yesterday. You're going to have John Sumrall as the new head football coach of Florida. He was introduced just a few hours ago. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I think the immediate reaction from Gator Nation was a bit of disappointment on Friday when the news started to break that, one, they weren't going to get Lane Kiffin, and two, that it was leading to look like it was going to be John Sumrall. But I think as time has passed, you've seen people kind of come full circle. You know, I know the more people that I talk to that know him, friends of mine that played with him in high school and in college, those that have been around him, you know, since he's been coaching both at Tulane and Troy, see what this guy's accomplished. They know the kind of person he is. They know what Florida needs right now. And that's somebody to rally around. You know, a lot of the criticism of Billy Napier was that he didn't show much emotion. That's quite the opposite of what John Sumrall is. And so I think with that, the fact that he's a winning head coach at two different Group of Five programs, and that he comes from some SEC pedigree, the fact that he played at Kentucky, he's been an assistant in this league as well. All of those things lead me to believe that this is ultimately going to be a hire. May not be the flashiest from the get-go when comparing it to Lane Kiffin, but I think flash is not necessarily what you need. Substance is what it's about. I think he's a man and a coach of a lot of substance.
Yeah, and I know when Tulane played Ole Miss earlier in the season, Lane Kiffin said it feels like John Sumrall is going to be a coach in the SEC next year. I think it was one of the worst kept secrets in America. A lot of people thought it was going to be to Auburn. It ends up being Florida. So clearly you wanted Kiffin first, but if this is the consolation prize, I think it's a phenomenal one, because I said it to his face 2 weeks ago. He's a football psycho. And I think that's something that Florida needs, is not only a coach to get them moving in the right direction, but a guy that fits the school, and his passion and his energy definitely does that.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, he's all football all the time from the guys that I know that have been around him. And I do think Florida needs somebody that's going to do everything they singularly can to bring this program back to where it used to be. Because honestly, Florida's on the verge of becoming irrelevant in a lot of ways. And, you know, this is a crucial hire. I think even more importantly, or equally as important, is the hires of the coordinators, particularly the offensive coordinator. I think Coach Sumrall's got to go out and find a guy that can be extremely dynamic with an explosive offense that can score points. Because let's be honest, that's what Florida has been built upon with the success in the 90s and 2000s. And that's kind of why they all kind of gravitated towards Lane Kiffin. But, you know, obviously that didn't work out. I think you've got a guy that's a little more stable, perhaps. And you go get that up-and-coming OC that can put up some points and entertain the fan base. I think people will quickly get excited about the hire.
If Brian Kelly didn't get fired and he was still the head football coach at LSU, do you think Lane would have left Ole Miss to take the job in the Swamp?
That's a tough question. You know, I think initially it looked like, you know, Florida was going to be the destination. You know, I think there were some things that turned each side off about one another as it related to Lane about Florida and Florida to Lane. So it didn't work out. But I used that old Garth Brooks song, Thank God for Unanswered Prayers. You know, sometimes we don't get what we want in life, but we get what we need. And I think for, you know, looking at how this thing has gone down in Oxford and what's happened in Baton Rouge, might be a bullet that Florida luckily dodged.
And there's going to be a lot of Florida fans that are saying, hey, Scott Strickland shouldn't have been able to make this hire. What's your read on the athletic director from afar?
I thought, you know, on Friday when the news broke, I think there were a lot of people hearing a lot of misinformation and stories that were not accurate. In hindsight, he moved quickly to make sure he got his guy before Auburn got him. You mentioned, you know, Auburn having some interest in Coach Summerall, and Ole Miss could have as well. He may not have been Lane Kiffin, but I think this was 1B in everybody's book in terms of the available coaches that could fit SEC openings. And Scott Strickland wasn't going to have that, you know, left out of his hands and stand there empty handed. So I think, you know, I give him credit for making a move, a decisive move when he had to on Friday.
Once Kiffin is off the table, clearly they pivoted to Summerall. They get him. Some Florida fans are going to say, ugh. Another group of five coach. What do you say to those fans that immediately dismiss it just because it's a G5 coach?
I think it's irresponsible. I mean, there's a lot of coaches that have had success at the highest level, including in the SEC, that have come from a group of five background. Not all group of five coaches are created equally, and not all group of five coaches bring all of their group of five assistants with them. And I think that's one of the key things you're going to see with this staff is it's going to be an accumulation of accomplished coordinators and assistant coaches that have some experience in the SEC that can help the acclimation process a little better. And you know, the addition of a new general manager as well. Florida's all in, pushing in the right direction right now. And that includes with the support of the financial aspect of it, which we all know right now in building a roster requires money.
Chris Doering here with us. How did you react to this weekend? I know Florida was associated with it, but it was clear heading into the weekend, it felt like, okay, it was going to be either you stay at Ole Miss or you go to LSU. But everything that happened over that three-day stretch with Lane Kiffin, your reaction to it was what?
Man, he milked every minute of the drama out, didn't he? I mean, this was a dramatic weekend on and off the field. I mean, think about this, Zach. We had the SEC championship participants still left up in the air until the final seconds of the final game that was being played in the SEC, Auburn and Alabama. The Tide put that great drive together to punch their ticket to Atlanta. So we used every bit of that clock, and we used every bit of the promise that we'd get an answer on Saturday, which actually rolled into Sunday for Lane Kiffin. The storylines coming out, including that Juice Kiffin's not even his real dog. I mean, there's all sorts of things that we're finding out here after the fact, and I'm sure there'll be continued release of information as we move forward.
This could be tricky because I know you played in a different era. And, you know, there wasn't NIL and there wasn't the transfer portal the way that it is today. But if you were a player in that Ole Miss locker room, would you want Lane Kiffin to continue coaching your team if he already said, hey, I'm leaving Ole Miss to go to LSU, but clearly Lane Kiffin still wanted to coach through the playoff?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know that I have enough information to make that statement. You know, I do know that when Ole Miss made the announcement about Pete Golding taking over, there was a large rush of excitement from all the players. You know, I think they understand that Golding's not only a great coach, but a guy that's committed to being there in Oxford. Unfortunately, in life, there's a lot of things that we want, and, you know, we don't get to have our cake and eat it, too. I do think having Lane Kiffin on the sideline would have helped their chances of winning. But with the way this thing has gone down and the negativity that seems to be around, you know, his departure, I don't know that you could have him on the sideline. And I give credit to Keith Carter, the athletic director, for what he's done in some decisive moves and being very definitive. I think this has actually rallied the fan base there in Oxford. I think you're going to see an overwhelming amount of support for the Grove Collective that continues to be one of the best collectives in all of college football. This was proof of concept. This is proof that Ole Miss is not some second-tier program nationally. They have the ability to win at the highest level. They are here in the playoff. Pete Golden can keep the train on the tracks. And with the financial support that I know will continue, I don't see any reason why this Ole Miss team can't compete for both an SEC championship and a college football playoff berth going forward.
And really, with someone that doesn't have a dog in the fight, outside of my +950 ticket for Alabama to win the championship that I've had all throughout the start of the season, but as someone that doesn't have a rooting background with any of these teams that are going to make the college football playoff. I kind of want to see Ole Miss go on a run here and take it as far. And I'm curious to see what the committee's going to do because now they don't have their coach. I don't think they're going to drop him out of the playoff, but I think they are going to drop him, and it kind of stinks out of getting a home playoff game.
If they drop him, I think that's completely irresponsible. I mean, there's no data point that we've seen, unlike the Jordan Travis injury where we saw him play against Florida, saw him play against the ACC championship and the ACC championship, and it was a completely different team. We haven't seen anything. In fact, I thought the team focused incredibly well on Friday with this deadline looming on Saturday, played a really sharp game in all three phases and won decisively. I don't think there's any merit for demoting the Rebels given what they've done. They're an 11-1 team from the SEC. I think they deserve to host, and I'm excited to see what Oxford would look like with a home playoff game.
Chris Doering here with us. So my producer doesn't agree with this statement. Aaron Murray has not agreed with this statement. I think Alabama is in regardless if they win or lose in the SEC title game. Would you agree with that, or do you think they need to win to get in?
Is that because of your plus 950 ticket that has you feeling like that?
It's just two losses in the regular season. Last year they showed you it doesn't really matter, you know, if you lose in the conference championship game.
I am with you. Could you imagine the committee having to look Greg Sankey in the eyes and tell him that your conference runner-up is not good enough to be in the SEC or in the college football playoff? That would not go over very well.
We'd have a 16-team playoff before this one even started, honestly.
Exactly. There is no way that's going to happen here. The SEC, when you're one of the two best teams in the SEC, clearly that's all that you need to say about your deservedness of playing in the college football playoff.
Chris Doering here with us. When you get to the Miami-Notre Dame debate, if that's what it comes down to, because there's a chance, right, if Texas Tech beats BYU, I think BYU is out. I don't think Texas, even though Sark made a good case, I don't think they're going to get in. It feels like there's a good chance we're coming down to this argument of Miami and Notre Dame. Who do you think should get in, and who do you think will get in?
Yeah, I mean, the regular season has to count. You know, the fact that both teams are 10-2, I know it was way back at the end of August when this game occurred, but it's still in the 2025 season. So we need to be able to have head-to-head matter when you have the same exact record. And I would even make the case that like Texas may have an argument for getting in over 10-2 Vanderbilt, given the fact that, you know, they scheduled so difficultly out of the gates with Ohio State, the defending national champion in Columbus, and beating Vanderbilt head-to-head. But in this instance, with Notre Dame and Miami both being at 10-2 and Miami having won that game, there's no loss of a quarterback or coach or anything else that you can justify. They have the same record. Notre Dame lost in that game. Miami deserves to be over the Irish.
Chris Doering, what do you think of Alex Golish going to Auburn and then Ryan Silverfield going to Arkansas?
Yeah, I don't know enough about Silverfield yet. I obviously saw them, you know, knock off Arkansas earlier in the season. But as for Golish, you know, I watched him when he was here in the SEC at Tennessee as Heupel's offensive coordinator. I watched him walk into the swamp with an undermanned USF team and beat my alma mater. I mentioned it when we did the press conference shows today. Auburn needed somebody with some edge, and they went out and got a guy with some edge. I mean, this dude was born in the Soviet Union back in the day. I mean, that's all you got to say about cred right there. But I think you look at his fire on the sideline. You look at what he said today about needing to run the ball. That perked up the ears of Auburn Tiger fans. I mean, running the football is in their DNA. So I think this is a great hire for them. I know that they were kind of trying to get with Summerall as well, but I think Golish is a good fit for the Tigers.
When you look at Kentucky, all good things come to an end. I think it was past time to get rid of and move off of Mark Stoops, who was an incredible coach for them. What do you think is next for Kentucky? Where should they look to?
Yeah, 13 seasons, you know, the longest tenured coach in the SEC. I have great admiration for Coach Stoops and what he did there. It took that team, that program, to new heights. They were always kind of right there on the doorstep but couldn't punch their ticket. You know, had a couple chances late in the season and a couple seasons to beat Georgia to get the SEC championship game for the first time. Couldn't do it. Unfortunately, like you said, it's kind of gone in the wrong direction the last 2 years, and I think the writing was kind of on the wall. You know, in terms of a coach, I mean, I always thought Summerall was going to head to Kentucky, and Kentucky didn't quite, you know, move quick enough to be able to secure a former player there. So I'm not sure where they go, but I hope that they can build on the success of what Coach Stoops created You look at the investment, the infrastructure, their practice facility, the football facility, everything there is just top notch. I know Mitch Barnhart runs a great athletic department in general. And so finding somebody Kentucky, I don't know if you've been there, man, but Kentucky has one of the underrated football fans. Everybody thinks about them as being basketball fans, but they are very knowledgeable and very passionate and show up despite the product sometimes not being the best. So they deserve somebody that can get them back in the mix. And we're seeing it right now. If Indiana and Vanderbilt can compete for college football playoff spots, no reason Kentucky can't.
You know, three names came to mind. Will Stein, who's from the area. I read, grew up as a Kentucky fan, even though he played for Louisville. Brian Hartline, right? His brother played for Kentucky and is also on the staff right now. And then I would say Dan Mullen. Like, if he wants to leave UNLV and get back into the SEC, Dan Mullen could be a good fit for Kentucky.
Yeah, no, I would agree with all three of those. And I think at a place like Kentucky, it is about fit. You know, I think it's important that you have somebody that understands, what that makeup of that dynamic is with that region in the country. But I also think you have to understand that you're going to have to share the stage with basketball, and you're going to have to share a higher split of the revenue too. And so it does take somebody a little different that is able to maybe put the ego aside.
You know, it is actually crazy because I'll never forget. It was one of the most craziest things I had to talk about just in terms of college athletics and things that like aren't serious. When Calipari years ago said they were a basketball school and Mark Stoops actually made Calipari apologize for it. It kind of showed you how good, you know, obviously Stoops was, that you could get Kentucky, who's a basketball school, get a guy like Calipari to have to apologize for that. It really shows how good of a job that he did at that university.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree with you 100%. And he deserves to be appreciated. Again, kind of limped to the finish line here the last two seasons. But this is a guy that took them higher than anybody else has and deserves a lot of credit.
So we talk about fit. You know, like on paper, if BYU is losing Kalani Sitake, if that happens to Penn State, I think from afar, most people are going to say, hey, it doesn't really seem like a fit, even though I think his energy could match the energy of the AD and Pat Kraft. If that does go down, that after getting rid of James Franklin, Penn State hires Kalani Sitake, what would your thoughts be from afar?
I mean, that would be an amazing get, I think, both ways. A lot of success there. Obviously, you know, I focus a little bit more on the SEC and have not covered BYU in his stint there, but have watched from afar and seems like a very strong leader and somebody that could handle, you know, being in that bright light of that job at Penn State and the expectation level that goes along with it.
You know, last thing I'll ask you, just getting back to John Sumrall going to your school, Florida, what do you think he needs to know? Like, if you had to tell the new Florida coach just some things about Florida to make sure that they get it right, what would you tell him?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a very passionate fan base. I think it's one that, you can see expects a lot. There hadn't been a Florida coach that's made it through 4 years since Urban Meyer left. And so you're not going to have a ton of time, man. The idea of, hey, we got to build a program, it's going to take a couple of years. The transfer portal, what other teams are doing around the country, you got to come in and hit the ground running. So I think it's so much about hiring the right coordinators and assistants, as I said, but also going out and being able to mine that transfer portal. This is a very talented roster that he inherits. The question is, can he keep those guys going out and keeping Jaden Baugh, keeping Miles Graham, figuring out, you know, how to rally not only the existing guys on the roster, but the commits that they have. That's a top 10 class right now. He's got a lot of work to do, but he needs to hit the ground running.
One last thing, Chris Doran, when you get to the SEC championship game of Georgia and Alabama, what do you think the keys are to this one?
I mean, it's all about protecting Ty Simpson. You go back to that first game, I think they completed about 68% of those third downs, including the first half where they are absolutely unconscious. If you've seen the last month of the season, that offensive line, the pass protection in general has not been very good. Ty Simpson's accuracy has gone down. So they've got to find a way to protect. I think Georgia's defense has gotten better. They're more penetrating up front. It's a fascinating matchup given the history with Kirby. I think, 1-7 against Alabama. But another opportunity to kind of change the narrative for the Bulldogs.
He's Chris Doran. Chris, hey, we really appreciate the time today. Thanks so much for doing this once
Thank
again.
Thank you, man. Take care.
There you go. Chris Doran with us on the Zach Yelb Show. We'll take a break. When we come on back, we'll do a little studs and duds on this big football Monday.
On the Zach Gelb Show, we're looking for studs.
Back to pass. Bosa picked up. Deep shot. Jefferson. Yes!
But sometimes we have to tolerate the duds.
They stink.
Lamar takes the snap. Rolls to the right. Throws. Complete. No! He dropped it. Mark Andrews hit him in the hands.
Now for the moment you've all been waiting for.
And here we go.
It's time for studs and duds.
All right, let's start in the college football world with some studs. So 3:50 to go, fourth quarter. You're at Jordan-Hare, tie football game, 20-20. Alabama's going on a meticulous drive, and it's a fourth and two. It's a fourth and two at Auburn six, right? Just kick the field goal. Go up by three, go up 23-20, and then trust your defense in the final 3 minutes and 50 seconds. Well, Kalen DeBoer said, I'm putting my cojones on the table, and I got brass balls. That's what Kalen DeBoer said. On fourth and two, not only did he go for it, he converted it. And not only did he convert it, it was in the end zone for a tutty to put the Crimson Tide up 27-20.
Simpson, end zone, touchdown, Isaiah Horton with the hat trick. A stunning decision, frankly, to pass up the chip shot and roll the dice, and it worked.
With everything that's at stake for Alabama.
Stud.
All right, I'm going to stick in the SEC here, and one of the best stories of the year that has been Vanderbilt football, and it's a shame that they're probably not going to make the playoffs despite being 10-2 on the year, but Diego Pavia, a great year that he has had, and he kind of finished that off with a big 45-24 win over Tennessee, completed 18 of 28 passes for 268 yards, had a touchdown, and also rushed for 165 yards. He had 20 carries, so he's doing the bulk of the carrying the ball as well on the season. 38 total touchdowns, just 8 interceptions. He is third in Heisman odds. He'll likely be a finalist there. And here, of course, was that rushing touchdown to put the game away late.
Pistol formation for Pavia from a Kylan Gunn behind him. Mance in motion. There's a snap. Pavia runs toward the left. He finds some space. There goes Pavia at the 10, at the 5. Touchdown, Vanderbilt. Diego Pavia. This kid is a legend. What a run for 24. Diego Pavia silences Knoxville.
Stud.
Did you see what happened with his brother? His brother got arrested during the game for public intoxication. It was the second time this season his brother's been arrested for public intoxication. We got the dud sounder there just real quickly. Diego Pavia's brother.
Dud.
All righty, Samter, what do we got cooking?
I'm going with your favorite head coach, and that's Mr. Ryan Day.
James Franklin's at Virginia Tech. What are you talking about?
Getting that proverbial Ann Arbor monkey off of his back. Beating Michigan, and not just beating Michigan. They absolutely drubbed them. It was only 27-9, but I think they held Michigan to like 160 total yards on offense. They couldn't move the ball. 22 first downs to 9.
Yeah.
40 minutes of possession to 19. I mean, it was an absolute 419 yards for Ohio State, 163
right,
for
just
Michigan.
Just play the highlight. I don't want to hear anymore. Let's
absolutely
just play the highlight.
Nonsense. Before last season, there were questions
this,
about...
Like, seriously, just play the highlight. I don't want to hear this anymore.
I don't care. This is my microphone.
Just play the highlight. Let's get this over
with. As you can imagine, over the years, winning this game, what I'd say in this press conference, and I'm going to save all those comments because I think the best thing to do is win with humility.
Yeah. Class.
And that's what we're going to do, and I think that's it speaks to our program.
Legend.
It speaks to what it means to be a Buckeye. We wanted to take this rivalry game back this year. And so the way that our guys played certainly spoke to that. And they played with great passion and great physicality.
Stud!
I'll tell you, when they threw the interception early, I'm sitting there saying, here we go again. And they made a little like pan to Ryan Day on the camera, and he looked like he was about to cry. But hey, you know, give him credit. It was the last 4 years obviously did not go his way, and he was embarrassed, but... they walked into the big house and they opened up a can of whoop-ass on the Michigan Wolverines. And Sherrone Moore, you may not be that guy, pal. You may not be that guy, pal. And Bryce Underwood, they paid you too much money to play the way that you did. All righty, let's go to the NFL world. I think one of the more underappreciated stories in the NFL this season are the Carolina Panthers. They could win the NFC South. If they don't, I don't know if they're going to go to the playoffs, but the Carolina Panthers are now 7-6, and here are their victories this season. They beat the Falcons 30-0. They beat the Miami Dolphins 27-24. They beat the Cowboys 30-27. They beat the Jets 13-6. Then they beat the Packers in Green Bay. They beat the Falcons again. And now they beat one of the hottest teams in the league in the LA Rams by a score of 31-28. And how about Bryce Young? A year ago was benched, got his job back, improved down the stretch. But this year, he's playing some solid football. Here was a stat line on Sunday in the 31-28 win over the Rams. 15 of 20 for 206 yards, 3 touchdowns, no interceptions. That was just efficient play by the quarterback of the Carolina Panthers. And let's hear the late touchdown to Tedatora McMillan.
Rams crowd the line of scrimmage with a one high safety look. Bryce off play action. Has time in the pocket. Throws downfield for McMillan. Makes the catch of the 20. He's got the 10. The 5. Touchdown T-Mac. Touchdown Carolina. And the Panthers take the lead.
Stud.
Snoop.
All right. I'm going all the way back to Thanksgiving Day for my NFL stud. And look at the Cowboys. They have won 3 straight. They are one of the hottest teams in the NFC right now. And they beat the Chiefs 31-28 on Thanksgiving Day. And Dak Prescott had another great game. He was 27 of 39, threw for 320 yards, had 2 touchdowns. He now leads the league in passing yards and is only behind Matthew Stafford in passing touchdowns. And here was one of those passing touchdowns from last Thursday.
Prescott looking that way. Now he runs up out of the pocket. He sprints to the right. He dumps the ball to Williams, who steps in from the 1. Touchdown, Cowboys. They drew it up in the dirt.
Stud.
I'll tell you with the Cowboys, I like Schottenheimer a lot. Dak's having a good season. George Pickens is behaving himself, and he's balling. You know, the Cowboys, they're getting hot here. They are getting hot here. It's getting interesting. They come on back. They beat the Eagles now 21-0, and then they have that performance on Thanksgiving Day against the Chiefs. Very, very impressive. Samter.
Another one of your favorite coaches. I think this is like Troll Zach Day. I'm going to go with the red-hot Chicago Bears and Ben Johnson. They've won 5 in a row, 9 of the last 10. They just beat up on the defending champion Eagles, who that's a whole other story. They're a mess right now. But right now, the Bears look good. Their defense is good. Caleb Williams is making plays. All the question marks about whether or not he can win in the clutch, he's answering those questions. And after the game, I know you love a good post-game speech. I know you love Dan Lanning's post-game, you know, psychoness. You want to talk about a football psycho? I know you don't like Ben Johnson because of how he acted in the offseason. But when you see stuff like this, what he did after that game and taking off his shirt in this post-game speech, I think you have to start liking Ben Johnson.
I know you guys are hungry for more, right?
Itching.
Let me tell you something. The city of Chicago is hungry, too.
It's Chicago! It's Chicago!
Here we go! Good, better, bad!
Good, better, bad!
Never let it rest!
Never let it rest!
It's good, get better!
It's good, get better!
It better get better!
It better get better!
There's not 3, better!
Now, I will say, in this offseason, Ben Johnson was douchey McDoucheface. He was. He was unlikable. He was arrogant. He was cocky. The first 2 weeks of the season, he didn't look all that good. But they are winning games in Chicago, and that's all that matters. And they just got a signature win by beating the Philadelphia Eagles in the way they ran the football. The background story, though, on him taking his shirt off, I actually may now start to like Ben Johnson. There's a legendary hot dog stand in Chicago called the Wiener Circle. They basically berate you as you're ordering hot dogs. So they made a challenge. If Ben Johnson took his shirt off in a, you know, when addressing the team in the post game, that they would give free hot dogs to all Chicagoans. So on December 2nd, tomorrow, the Wiener Circle will still berate you, but they'll be giving you free hot dogs. So Ben Johnson, I mean, it's still complicated, but he is growing on me. All righty, let's get to the college football duds. All SMU had to do was beat Cal, and they would have been back in the ACC championship game with the chance to go back to the college football playoff. And they couldn't do so. They're playing Cal. Going into the game, Cal only had 6 wins on the season. I get it. SMU isn't, you know, this juggernaut this year, but they had 8 wins on the season entering this game, and you let Cal beat you? And there was like 100 fans maybe in that stadium, and they still almost toppled the sideline reporter and the Cal coach, the interim coach for Cal afterwards, which was a crazy scene as the Cal fans were storming the field. But late in the game, with the chance to tie it up and send this baby into overtime, I'm not going to crush the kicker because it was a 52-yard field goal, but it was no good in SMU season. Pretty much, I know they're going to go to a bowl game, but it's pretty much over because they're not going to the college football playoff.
With a spot in the ACC championship game. Kick is up. And the kick is... no good! Cal is going to win it! And Duke will play for the ACC championship!
Dud!
Stu!
All right, I'm going to go with Haynes King for mine. And he's had a really good year, but on Friday against Georgia, just was not his game. Now, Georgia Tech's defense did a really nice job against Georgia, holding them to just 16 points. They held Gunnar Stockton to just 70 passing yards. They forced a turnover as well, but the Yellow Jackets on offense were not good, scoring only 9 points. I know it wasn't all Haynes King's fault, but he was 19 of 27, 181 yards, no touchdowns, and one interception. Red zone struggles as well all game, and after the game, Haynes King talked about those offensive red zone struggles.
You got to convert on third downs and to keep the drive going. You know, I don't know how many plays we had, but I think we had like 21 in the first quarter. That's not very good unless you're scoring from far out. You know, we didn't do that. And, you know, like I said, when you spot people a couple of possessions, you can't really run it as much either. You know, you got to try to find things that work. And, you know, we found ways to move the ball, just couldn't finish the red zone.
Dud.
I'm going to go with Texas A&M quarterback Marcel Reed. They went undefeated going into the last game of the year against Texas. He was terrible. 20 of 32, 180 yards, 62% completion percentage, no touchdowns, 2 picks. Granted, he did have 70 yards rushing on the ground, but that was a game they had to win to get to the SEC championship game. They are not in the SEC championship game now. They'll obviously be in the playoffs for sure.
Yeah.
But, man, if you take away the game against FCS Samford 2 weeks ago, the dude has 7 touchdowns and 6 picks over his last 4 SEC games. He has not been great. Makes me really question whether or not A&M is actually a legitimate contender, because when he goes up against legitimate top-tier talent, he's really not, you know, all that special.
First down and 10, A&M off the right hash of the Texas 43. Marcel Reed has the snap. Back to throw. Looks. Still looks. Swings it out left side. Ball intercepted. Kobe Black. How about that?
Dud.
And also, he's dealing with an ankle injury, so we're going to have to see what his health is like moving forward in addition to that. Alrighty, let me get to my NFL dud. I was doing this game yesterday for Compass Media Networks. It was the Seahawks and the Minnesota Vikings. J.J. McCarthy was out with the concussion. You knew Max Brosper, the undrafted free agent, was going to be making his first career NFL start. Well, he got picked off not once, not twice, not 3 times, but 4 times. And Ernest Jones had 2 interceptions and a touchdown and led the Seahawks in tackles with 12 of them. But Max Brosmer, it was 4th and 1 early. I thought Kevin O'Connell should have ran the football here. Instead, though, he put the ball in his young quarterback's hand, and this happened.
4th down and 1 at the Seattle 4. Handoff, play fake. Brosmer being chased. Brosmer is going to go down as he throws. It's intercepted. Coming back to the inside. Far side 50. Down to the 40. Being chased. 20. 10. It's Jones who has intercepted his 4th pass of the year. And this one goes to the house.
Dud.
Now, just for the record, for our listeners and our viewers out there, you sent a Slack to us at 5:50 yesterday saying, my NFL dud is Max Brosmer. His pick 6 was one of the worst I've ever seen. The game was barely at the half.
Didn't matter.
He only had that 1 pick, and you still called him your dud. He threw 3 picks after you called him your dud. He's the dud of the dud of the dud. That was amazing. I was loving that.
I'm doing the game for Compass Media Networks, and I'm talking to my producer in between breaks, and I go, that's going to do at 10-0. They didn't even need the touchdown. 3-0, it was over. That Minnesota offense had nothing, and Justin Jefferson, my guy, Justin Jefferson, you and Drake May would look good in New England. Force a trade. Just saying, they're wasting Justin Jefferson with the Minnesota Vikings. All righty, Stu, go ahead.
All right. I will go Pete Carroll on this one. Another loss for the Raiders, which is probably like a win at this point. But
hit the retirement home.
Yeah, 2-10. They've been a shell of themselves. They look like they took a step back from last year even, which is saying a lot. Obviously, we talked about Chip Kelly being fired. He fired the special teams coordinator earlier in the season. And just really all aspects around a terrible season and a terrible game. And obviously, the Chargers, they had a really nice day offensively. And they had this rushing touchdown as well, which kind of sealed the deal.
And there's the pitch to Vidal. He's got to get to the corner, and he does. There he goes, into plus territory. Vidal on his horse. 30, 20, 10. Kimani Vidal, touchdown, Chargers. 59 yards.
Dud.
All righty, let's go from one retirement home guy and Pete Carroll to the next one.
Well, I'm going to go to the Steelers offense. I know we can knock Mike Tomlin. I'm just
Rogers.
Going with the offense
going
in general.
Yeah.
I'm just going with the offense in general. 166 total yards, 10 touchdowns to 26 for Buffalo, 18 minutes of possession, two turnovers, a fumble, an interception. They were just brutal. Aaron Rodgers, who had 117 yards passing before he got hurt. Mason Rudolph took over with 14:44 left in the third. He had four possessions that he played in. He played in four possessions, starting from 14 minutes left in the third to the end of the game. He threw three passes, completed none of them for no yards. The only completion he had was to the other team for an interception. They are awful. And remember, the Steelers were cruising in the AFC North earlier in the season before the Ravens got hot. I mean, they're 6-6 now. They might not even finish above 500, let alone make the playoffs or win the division. And this is exactly how it sounded when Aaron Rodgers got hurt on the same play that Christian Benford returned a fumble for a touchdown.
Pistol formation for Rodgers. Turns and play action pass. Dancing out to his right, in trouble, and hit from behind by Bosa. The ball is out. It is scooped up. It is run in for a Buffalo Bills touchdown. Christian Benford scooped it up, and one play into the second half, the Bills have taken the lead.
Dude.
Yeah, I thought it was funny in that game when they put Rodgers back in. I was like, can he just put his feet up? Like, there's no point in throwing him out there on the field. The nose was all busted. He has that huge, what I think it was a cast that was on his wrist because he has multiple fractures in his left wrist. It was ugly, ugly, ugly. Jay in Nashville, I'll get you on the other side. You'll also hear from John Sumrall and Lane Kiffin before we let you run. Update time first, though. Here is the Ackman, Rich Ackerman. 888-710-4ISN, 888-710-4476. Let me go to Jay in Nashville next up on the Zach Gelb Show. Jay, what's shaking, my man?
Man, it's cold down here in Nashville right now, but we all right. Shoot, I know you just did the studs and duds, and tell you right now, the stud of the whole season got to be Cignetti, because you know what? He stayed at Indiana, and he's going to the playoffs with his team. So, you know, and you know what? They got a magical season going on this year. You know what? Decided to stay, and we already know who the dud is. I mean, it's more like a heartless dud, and I'm a Lane supporter, but I just can't believe he went out like this.
I could believe he went out like this. Like, come on.
I know.
This is Lane, you know, whether it was the PowerPoint with Al Davis, you know, what happened in Tennessee, getting fired at USC. This is what Lane does. He likes the drama. It's needed for college football because he's the personality guy. He's the polarizing guy. We want a little personality from the coaches. But no, you know, Saban and Pete Carroll basically told him to take the job, and he listened to them, and now he's the head football coach there.
Yeah, I mean, but he had that whole special, like, oh, I found myself in Oxford, and I'm a changed man. And then the thing about it, I even said it on Maggie and Perloff this morning. And I almost got in trouble for saying the H word, but spelling it out, basically. But I better not hear nothing from
him. They wouldn't let you say ho in that show?
Yeah, they'd be like, oh, you can't, we got to drop you because you spelled it
really?
Out. Like,
ho? Can I not say ho, Stu? I've been saying it.
Sounds good to me. Sounds fine to me.
Yeah. So.
I don't know, but he did go out like a ho.
On the afternoons, we let you say ho, Jay. In the mornings, they won't let you say ho, you know?
I think that's what it is. Sesame Street is still on, so you can't say ho like while Sesame Street is on.
Just say he was a ho, 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 ho. Merry Christmas. That's what you got to say.
Just say he was a back ho. You know what I mean? I used to drive one. But like I said, the way he went out and with that ho word is like, dude, somebody needs to. We're talking NIL, and I better not hear Saban ever complain about NIL again. But they need to take his name, him, his likeness, and make him build him an OnlyFans account, because that's how he went out, like, straight up ho. And it's like, and I don't like calling that, because I am a Lane. I'm a still support Lane.
Yeah, you're a Lane train guy.
But this move right here, this was a whole move.
Yeah.
It really was.
Jay, appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much. There's Jay in Nashville. Let's hear from Lane Kiffin. He was introduced as new head football coach at LSU, and he made it clear that he presented a plan to Ole Miss to continue to be able to coach them even while taking the LSU job so he could continue out the season.
Yeah, great first question. That was, as I referred to, that was excruciating and difficult. And like I said, we tried every possible thing for a long time the other night and into the morning. As you saw, the team meeting announcement get pushed back because we were trying to get that done. And I'm very grateful for the chancellor there and Keith Carter, you know, that they listened. We presented a plan how that could be done and give the players there the best chance to win in the playoffs. And at the end of the day, that's their decision. And I respect that. And made a good point. You know, that may make sense to everybody outside why the best thing was to keep us all together for the playoffs. It may make sense to all the national media why that makes sense to do that. But, you know, like he said, he has to live there. And I totally respect that. And I respect their decision and so appreciative for them.
Hey, it don't really make sense to me. You're leaving. Like, yeah, I would want you to continue to coach those kids. But you left to another SEC school. And you were so sloppy about it, and you're just going to recruit your own staff and recruit those kids there for 3 weeks until the run ends. So I could understand why they wanted to let you go. All righty, let's hear from John Summerall. He made it clear that he talked to Lane Kiffin a lot throughout this whole process.
I do want to be very direct on one thing, and you may or may not appreciate this, but Lane Kiffin and I have been going through the same thing, and we've talked a lot. We were both in agreement that I was the right man for this job. All right? So he co-signed on that.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This is Free Range with Von Miller, the podcast where I step outside the lines and I take you with me. Each week, we're talking everything from the biggest stories around the league to the biggest stories off the field. This isn't your average sports podcast. This is game meets culture, locker room meets living room, and no topic is off limits. So if you're into good conversations that ruffle a few feathers, join me every Wednesday and follow Free Range with Von Miller everywhere you get your podcast.
Welcome to Radio Rental. The scariest stories you've ever heard in your life. All told by real people. And off we go.
This wasn't a human being that I saw. Just something here in this house. Something not of this world.
There was a woman moving through the hall. I stepped back and I was completely alone.
Radio Rental is available now. Listen for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey there, we're Corinne Vien and Sabrina Deanna Roga here to introduce our newest podcast, Crimes of, a Crime House original.
Crimes of is a weekly series that explores a new theme each season, from crimes of the paranormal, unsolved murders, and more. Our first season is Crimes of Infamy, the true crime stories behind Hollywood's most iconic horror villains.
Listen to and follow Crimes of, available now wherever you get your podcasts.